We have with us now Chris and Denise. That is Chris Masterjohn and Denise Minger. And Denise Minger has recently become kind of famous.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, yeah, you gave that talk, when was that, Sunday or Monday?
Tuesday.
Oh. That
when you're on
the
phone,
yeah.
You were giving the talk and you were mentioning that you were going along in relatively, you know, obscure. You weren't really expecting to make a splash in all of this. And so you went through some of the numbers of the China study going back to the original stuff. And then Dr. T. Colin Campbell did you the favor of going Streisand on you. It's like if he just ignored you, that would have been the end of it, right?
Yeah, I think him jumping in and actually responding to me definitely was a boon from my side, just because it did kind of increase the scope of our whole debate, and it spread it into different spheres.
Then it went viral.
It did went viral, yeah.
And now that you're famous, are you going to leverage that? Or?
You know, well, I did get a book deal out of the whole thing, and I think that's like my next project, and that's what I've been working on pretty intensely for the past
year. And that's the one you were talking about at your presentation. What's the title?
It's called Death by Food Pyramid.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. That is fantastic.
Thank you. I was a little nervous because right after I came out with the title, the USDA retired the food pyramid, and they came out with my plate. And so yeah. I was thinking, oh, no, well, now I can't do it. But I think the title kind of fits just because the food pyramid is kind of our icon of, like, conventional wisdom and just the things that we've been told for decades now about diet and health. It's just it's the emblem that is burned into our retinas. So right. I like sticking with that title.
Now, when you wrote this blog post, what else how were you employed then?
At the specific time, I was actually living on insurance money from a pretty major accident. I'd gotten hit by a car. I was in the hospital for a while. My arm was all messed up. And I think what I was planning on was I was going to go to Thailand with the money that I had been given as, like, pain and suffering money that the hospital gives you. And I couldn't get my passport for some reason. Like, I tried 3 times, and they kept rejecting it. And I kind of took it as a sign as, okay, well, maybe I'm not supposed to be traveling the world right now. I'll just do something else. And so I kind of had this free time. I had recently ended my last job. I was working as a school teacher, an after-school teacher, and I was kind of figuring out where I should live, first of all, and what I should be doing. And I just, at that specific time in my life, I was debating online with a bunch of vegans who kept giving me the China study line. And so I was like, well, I'm going to see what this is about and see if I can find something that I can kind of throw back at them about this book. And so I tracked down the original data, which is published in like 900 pages. It's
right.
Beautiful if you like math. It's just, there's so much goodness in there. And I just had a blast for 3 months just studying this thing. And it was just fascinating to me. And I was just looking for patterns and dog-earing everything. And by the time I finished my own kind of review of it all and compared that with what Campbell was talking about in his book, I was just so astonished with the difference between what I was finding and what he was reporting. And I decided that I needed to put it somewhere, so I put it up on my blog. And I really had no intention of being a blogger or really having that be any part of my career. It was mostly just kind of a service to raw vegans who I was kind of still friends with, still partway in that community, just to give them better access to information because I didn't feel like they were getting it from their own kind.
Right.
So I had this little blog up. I'd get a couple of visitors a day and some comments here and there. And I honestly had no expectation for almost anybody to read this. And so it still shocks me that as many people read it and continue to read it. It never stops being mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. So you were thinking about continuing as a teacher. You said you worked as a teacher for a while, and then you had to quit that because of your accident.
Yeah, kind of. There was a good chance that my program was going to be cut due to finances, and I was back in Arizona. I'd been living in Portland for a while, and I was back in Arizona for the summer visiting my parents when I got hit by the car. And so when that happened, I had to stay down there for insurance reasons to get some surgeries and random stuff like that. So I wasn't sure at that point what I wanted to be doing next. And for a while I was considering going back to grad school for an MFA in creative writing so that I could teach it at the university level. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't feel like the right thing to do. It felt like I was kind of boxing myself into one career, whereas I like to do a whole lot of other things. And so I didn't want to invest my time and resources in a grad program if I wasn't sure that I was going to continue on that track. So it's kind of like a crossroads in life, and, you know, what should I do now? So it came at the perfect time, because as soon as that happened, I was like, no. Wow, this is awesome. I love doing this. I want to keep doing this.
I got to ask, how does a math geek get a degree in English?
Well, you know, I always wavered when I was in college between various majors. I loved the sciences. I loved math. I loved English. I loved art. And it was a matter of figuring out, you know, like, what can I do that's not going to kill my soul, and what can I do that's not going to make me go brain dead? So I was thinking of doing studio art, but it just didn't feel challenging enough. And then I was thinking of doing something in the sciences, but it just felt like it wasn't creative enough. So I decided what I really liked to do was, just the common denominator in everything was, I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed writing about science. I enjoyed writing fiction.
Unfortunately, at this point, my battery failed in my voice recorder, and the backup also managed to lose this data, and we haven't figured that out. So this recording will resume with Chris Masterjohn's answer to another question that I had.
If you think fat soluble vitamins is correct, then I think that this has the potential to have a revolutionary impact on how the requirements for fat-soluble vitamins and how the toxicity for thresholds for fat-soluble vitamins are estimated. Because rather than simply asking the question, how much vitamin A does someone need, how much vitamin D does someone need, we instead pose the question, within this given dietary context, how do these vitamins interact, and what are the appropriate ranges and ratios and ranges of ratios? So it becomes a very different question. And I think that it is a potential springboard to beginning to look at networks of interacting factors within diets that can eventually be a way to say, okay, let's stop thinking about vitamins and let's start thinking about foods, because maybe there's something very different about going out in the sun and eating liver than there is about taking a vitamin A supplement or a vitamin D supplement. And I think that scientists are beginning to get little bits of understanding of this idea that foods are more than their component parts, but so far it's a fledgling idea. And so I think investigating the interactions between different nutrients in any context, including this one and others, has the potential to move that forward from a fledgling concept to something that really has a lot of impact in the way that we think about nutrition in the mainstream.
Now, neither one of you guys has ever had a weight problem, right?
But yet I had a serious weight problem when I was younger. I was constantly under 135 pounds, and it took a lot of eating and exercise.
So you were underweight?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, what...
You're likely to get shot if you say that.
How did you get into this low-carb cruise thing? You're mostly into paleo stuff, right?
Is that
a girl?
I got you, both of us or Chris?
Well, both of you.
Well, personally, I'm not really attached to a specific movement. I'm just more interested in finding out the truth about whatever the truth is. And I think, the reason I got absorbed into the low-carb community, at least as a person that they invite onto cruises and stuff, is just because of my work with the China Study. And low-carb and plant-based, low-fat, vegan are just so often butting heads. I know that having arguments or just having an understanding of what's wrong with the China Study has been valuable for some of the members of low-carb and paleo communities, just so that they can understand kind of what to say back to vegans when the vegans come at them saying that, you know, your heart is going to explode from all that cholesterol.
Oh, that was liver.
Everything is going to explode.
Yeah. So how about you?
I don't think I've ever advocated a paleo diet or a low-carbohydrate diet, but I think I got adopted into both of these movements because I write a lot about how benefits of fat and cholesterol, and these are diets where there's a lot of people who like to eat fat and cholesterol, mm-hmm. So they have adopted me into their movement. I mean, I'm on the cruise I think we're both on the cruise because Jimmy Moore invited us to be here.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that we tried to make happen, but I think Jimmy recognizes that we might not necessarily eat low carbohydrate ourselves, but there's a lot of dovetailing between things that we like to write about or talk about and things that people in the paleo movement or the low carb movement like to write and talk about too. So
what do you attribute your fame? I actually learned about your blog. Yeah, your fame. I learned about your blog before I learned about Denise. So I was following the Daily Lipid back many months ago, and I actually only heard about Denise relatively recently.
Yeah, well, I had written a lot of, I started writing for, about nutrition for the Weston A. Price Foundation's Journal of Wise Traditions back in 2004. So I think fall of 2004 was when I first started writing. And a lot of people through that community knew me. A lot of people found those writings on the internet and started following me in that sense. And I started a website back in, I think it was in 2005, cholesterolandhealth.com, where I eventually published my blog, The Daily Lipid. But even before I started my blog, I had probably 40 to 60,000 people a month just finding me on Google. So I think by the time that I had a blog, I had that Google traffic. You know, someone clicks on my website, maybe they click on the blog, people can find me that way. But I think I had a base of people that I knew from work with Weston A. Price Foundation and so on, who were probably following me for that reason. And whenever paleo became popular in the last couple of years, I think I didn't actually know about the paleo movement until well after people with popular paleo blogs had been citing me a lot, in part because I never looked at my traffic stats. So I really didn't know who was visiting my blog or where they were coming from. But as it turned out, a lot of the people that actually, I think I found out about the paleo movement largely through the eruption of China study commotion that happened when Denise published her post. So as I increasingly found out about this community, I realized that a lot of people were following my blog already. So I guess the intersection of all these movements would explain how a lot of people know about my work.
Now, how did you two meet?
That's a long story. Well, it's actually interesting. Back in 2004, 2005-ish, when I was transitioning away from my raw vegan diet at the time, I was hanging out on a Yahoo, like a forum message board group that was called Native Nutrition, and it was based on the Weston A. Price Foundation, what they taught and everything. And he was one of the people who posted there with great frequency and whose posts I just tremendously admired because I thought he was so intelligent. So here I was kind of recovering from my vegan stuff. I was just lurking on there. I never posted. But I sort of had an internet crush on him just because I thought he was so smart and like just such a good writer, which I find very attractive. So I kind of had this little crush start back then, and I never talked to him or anything for like, what, 5 or 6 years. And then after I wrote my China study thing, Chris had also had a China study analysis up on his blog that was a little bit shorter, but it was one of the things that...
It was a lot shorter.
But he'd also gone back and forth with Campbell at one point. And so as soon as I wrote my critique, I passed it along to him thinking that maybe he would be interested in reading it just because he was so involved in the situation already. And so we started talking after that, just on email and... then how do we describe what happened at the end of 2010?
So Denise sent me her critique of the China study, and I very soon after talking to her knew that this was the most amazing person I've ever met in my life. And I think we could just say we were on opposite sides of the country, and there was a lot of stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, we weren't talking so much towards the end of 2010 for a variety of reasons, and we both wound up following different paths for a little while, and then wound up in the same place at the same time numerous times over the last year or so.
Yeah.
Sort of like Paleo FX or...
Well, neither of us, I don't think, were at PaleoFacts, but we were both at Ancestral Health Symposium and at Wise Traditions, and we're here, and we're going to be seeing a lot more of each other, even if we didn't want to.
You didn't want to,
both invited to a local Western Day Christ Foundation conference in Indianapolis in
September.
And we'll be at the Ancestral Health Symposium.
And
yeah, we posted some observations. You know, just I don't know if you saw our post from.
We stopped at a $3 wireless station in.
Oh right. Somebody commented.
I have a Google alert.
Is this a romantic relationship? And I said, well, you know, I saw him kissing.
You know, I don't like to speak for anybody else, but I mean, if you're going to kiss in front of me, then I figure I can say something.
Yeah.
The only reason we thought it was appropriate in public is because that's actually an academic interest of ours.
Kissing?
Now we're going to have to explore that later.
I don't want you to start any gossip. That was just a research.
My thing is professional skepticism. I don't believe the thing you just touched.
Okay. I think on that note, we probably ought to go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah.